Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. Back to the microphone after a weekend and a day off. Yesterday, couldn't do the show. I was up at my brother's watching his house. He drove up to Pennsylvania on Sunday, and his wife wasn't getting back till Monday evening. So I was up there Sunday into Monday, watching their house, actually technically watching their dog Kobe, who is a 90-pound ball of fun. He's getting old. I think he's 12 years old this year, but he still gets around okay. But I can't leave him there by himself. Have to feed him and everything else. So Kobe and I hung out. He's a dog that likes a schedule. If you get him out of that schedule, then he gets nervous and things. So I'm up there, and he did not eat at all on Sunday. He didn't. Laid around, slept, went outside, laid in the sun, you know, walked around the yard and everything. But he gets nervous very easily if things just aren't. He gets into his routine, and that is it. Things have to happen at certain times. He gets to go this out here at this time, there at that time. Anything outside of that, and he starts to worry, and that's what went on Sunday into Monday. He did eat a little bit yesterday, but it's just funny like that. It's just funny, and I know that regularly when my brother and his wife are there, he eats around 6 o'clock. Well, he didn't eat. I put the food out, didn't touch it until I think he got really, really hungry yesterday, and that's when he finally broke down to eat. Very, you know, kind of strange, but Kobe and I get along real well. But I missed yesterday simply because I did not have the equipment to record a show up there. Did watch the Masters, and Sergio Garcia won. I'm not a fan of him. You know, he has a reputation that he earned early in his career being a little bit of a brat and arrogant and everything, but I think he's changed quite a bit. He's not a youngster anymore. He's 37. I didn't realize he was 37. But I was fine to see him win. Phil, my favorite golfer, Phil Mickelson, he made the cut, but he was started out well on Saturday, but then that third hole got him, and it was just all downhill from there. So I don't know what's going on with Phil. Of course, he's not a youngster anymore either. But I did watch the Masters and watch that shootout that Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose had down the stretch. It was good golf. Golfers playing well, which is what you want to see. Nobody blew it. So each guy was playing their best. They both had nice rounds. And in the playoffs, Sergio won. So it was a pretty thrilling back and forth for the Masters. And I always enjoy watching that golf tournament. And no, before you ask, no, I have not seen the United Airlines video where the guy gets drug off the plane. No, I'm not watching it. I dislike flying enough as it is. So let's get to the show. On Saturday evening, there was a trivia championship. You've heard me talk about this before. On Thursdays is when I go up to Fat Cat Tavern in Largo, Florida with my people that I know, friends, people who have become friends of mine. And we have this trivia team that wins a lot. And after 8 weeks, they have a championship night, which is on a Saturday. So you have 8 weeks of Thursdays and then one Saturday evening. Well, this was championship Saturday, this past Saturday. And we ended up coming in, we ended up tying for first. We didn't know the final question. But the reason I'm talking about that is on the way there, I was talking to my mother on the phone. And we did get into politics just a little bit. She and my dad, sometimes they listen to the show, sometimes they don't. They are not obligated to do so. But she had asked me, are you starting to change your mind? She asked me, Ed, are you charting, or she called me Eddie. Eddie, are you starting to change your mind on Donald Trump? And I said, why should, you know, answer your mother's question why with another question? Which probably wasn't the nicest thing to do. But I asked her, why should I? And so we ended up having at least a 10-minute to 15-minute conversation about what has gone on in the last 2.5 months in Trump's administration. And her perception of what has gone on is easily different than mine is. And I'm not saying my mother is the most astute political person, but I think she reads the newspaper. She watches Fox News. Kind of a little bit knows what's going on. Of course, my dad follows it as well, and I'm sure they talk about these things. And, you know, we talked about Syria. I mean, my mother, we got into the conversation. My mother thought that it was a perfectly fine idea that we shot 60 Tomahawk missiles into Syria just because Assad gassed all those children. That's how she put it. Now, of course, as you know, I was not for it, and I explained to her why. And this is just, of course, we were talking about it the day after it happened last Friday. I talked to her on Saturday. And I told her why. You have to understand that the people that are getting gassed are no better than the person who is doing the gassing. And children get killed in war. And I asked her, would it be any different if these children had been gunned down or their throat slit or anything else? There's a lot of adults that died too. I mean, where do you draw the line in all of this? And I'm not talking about this to make fun of my mother. That's not what I'm doing at all. But I think what I'm doing is I think that my mother represents the thinking that is going on among many people, too many who should know better. Too many people who at one time said, well, we shouldn't be going in, we shouldn't be messing around in Libya, we shouldn't be messing around with Egypt and supporting the uprising in Egypt to overthrow Hosni Mubarak. We shouldn't have supported the people that wanted to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi. Well, those things happened, the United States supported it, and we're not better off. Those countries are not better off. But somehow, and really, I think what we're learning, and this is disgusting, is that even when it comes to things like shooting missiles into places, we support it if we like the president, and if the president that's in the White House we like, and we don't support it if the president in the White House is one we don't like. That's what it seems. Now, I know liberals do this, and in fact, you'll see that many former Obama administration staffers, national security people, have come out in favor of what Donald Trump did. And there is the thinking out there, and I think the thinking among too many Republicans is, well, you know, Barack Obama, he drew that line in the sand, and he said if Assad starts using chemical weapons, then the United States is going to act, and then we didn't. Well, that made us look weak. And now they're happy that Donald Trump is fulfilling a promise of a previous president that Donald Trump allegedly can't even stand. I want to know, is Donald Trump going to be fulfilling any other of Barack Obama's promises? Can we get that out of the way before this administration goes too far, or much further? I would prefer that, although I am not a huge fan of Donald Trump, I would prefer that he not fulfill any of the promises that Barack Obama made, no matter what they were. So it seems strange to me that there's so many Republicans who would want that promise fulfilled from a president who made the error of making the promise in the first place. Right? It seems to me that going back to whenever Barack Obama made that statement about, well, if they use chemical weapons, that'd be a red line we can't cross. Whatever year that was, I'm sure most Republican people, Republican lawmakers, conservative pundits, whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call them, whoever they are, said that was a stupid statement to make. We have no business going in there. But now that Donald Trump's in there, oh, yeah, yeah, we got to shoot missiles in there. And it's just wrong. It is just wrong. You know, there, Syria isn't the only place in the world where children are dying because of war. Or dying because leaders of that country are allowing famines to happen and everything else to happen. It's happening all over Africa. There are children starving in North Korea and elsewhere. We know that in a lot of Middle East countries, ones that we're even friends with, that child marriages, grown men marrying little girls, is accepted. We heard the stories about in Afghanistan, how it's just commonplace for adult men to rape boys. Remember those stories that we had of military, American military members who had were supposed to stand by and let that all happen, and then a couple of them got in trouble for kicking a couple of these Afghani guys' butts for doing this. Remember all those stories that we talked about sometime last year? All over the world, there are things like this happening to children, but we aren't shooting missiles into those places. So why are we doing it in Syria? And I remind you, these children who were killed are on the other side of a conflict in which there are no good people. It's not, this isn't the American Civil War, where the king wanted to keep control of the colonists, and the colonists wanted to have their own freedom, and they wanted to rule themselves, and so they were fighting against the king. Syria isn't that. This is not 1776 America. This is 2017 Syria. And now we're involved in something that, you know, we're going to get into this a little deeper, but I hate to think, and I've seen it. I've seen tweets from Mark Levin and a bunch of other people who should know better, you know, saying this is what it looks like for the United States to be strong. Oh, so we have to. So that's the way it is now. We have to shoot missiles for the United States to be strong. I could have sworn that Teddy Roosevelt said the way to be strong is to walk silent and carry a big stick. Carry a big stick. That doesn't mean swing a big stick. That was one version of it. Ronald Reagan, with the build-up of the United States military, I mean, if you really want to get down to it, didn't do anything compared during the course of those years, 81 to 89, that Ronald Reagan was president, and it was seen as the United States was, quote-unquote, strong. Do we even have cruise missiles back then? We had some sort of, we had missiles and things back then. I don't know if they were the exact same kind that we have now. But did the United States even shoot 60 missiles total in the Ronald Reagan years? Coming from American aircraft or shooting off from a ship, did we even do anything like that in the 8 years that Ronald Reagan was president? 8 years, the most conservatives would say the United States was strong those years. Now, I know we did some things, helped out of course, the Contras, right? And we might have helped out the British when they wanted to take back the Falkland Islands. Defend the Falkland Islands, I guess you could say. I know we went after Gaddafi and bombed his palace and some things. But you add up everything that was done in those strong years of the 1980s for the United States. We didn't do anything compared to what Donald Trump did on Friday. It's funny how the definition of strong has changed. Now, do you believe that? Does the United States in 2017, do we have to show off our strength, or do we have to gain respect back? And I realize, hey, I'll be the first to admit it. We lost it. during the Barack Obama years. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But is that the way you get it back? By shooting missiles into a country where you have no business being? It's a very interesting argument to make, and I think it's a tough argument to make. So my mother and I had that conversation. We also talked about the health care bill and why it didn't pass and everything. But I can tell you this. My mother's conservative, maybe not as conservative as I am. My father's conservative, not as conservative as I am. And we have differed. We still differ on many topics, even though we'd all call ourselves conservative. But if the conversation that I had with my mother on Saturday is an indication of where conservatives are regarding Syria, for example, and the AHCA, where her opinion, I think, was that, well, at least he's trying to do something and it was going to make it better, then conservatism is in trouble. And this is something that I predicted a long time ago, well before the election of 2016 ever happened, is that my fear was that too many conservatives would get behind Donald Trump, and then when he became president, feel then like they needed to defend him. And they wouldn't, they'd just digest the news that they like. Because there's obviously something going on where too many conservatives are just reading what they want to hear regarding Donald Trump. And I got off the phone and I remember with my mother, and I remember thinking that, and I've said this before, and this is a point that I've made with my buddy Dave, although not recently, is that, you know, when you get so caught up in one thing with a politician, I'll give you the example that I think is the best, a real world example, and that is the Supreme Court nomination. Neil Gorsuch, he's now part of the Supreme Court. It's back to 9. It was 8 for a while, and now it's 9. Neil Gorsuch is officially a member of the Supreme Court. He got confirmed. The Democrats did not filibuster, although they threatened to, and then the nuclear option was pulled, but they didn't. It was too late to do that, and so they kind of went somewhere in between. But it's an unfortunate that the nuclear option had to be used, but that's the way it goes. But I got to tell you, in my opinion, the Democrats kind of played it out the way that I thought they would. They didn't filibuster, and they let it go through. And they'll say they're going to lie to their constituents about what they did. And everybody's just going to – they're just going to have to live with it. But that lone you know, everybody was so worried in the campaign going back to August to November of 2016. What happens if Hillary Clinton gets on the Supreme Court? Who's she going to – or she gets to be president. Who's she going to put on the Supreme Court? You know, we have to put anybody in there to make sure that doesn't happen, because then we're going to lose our free speech rights, our gun rights, all of these things. Things that, of course, I never bought into. And the counter argument that I made back then, and you heard me make it, and I'll continue to make it to this day, is that if you get Donald Trump as president, even if he nominates somebody the conservative to the Supreme Court, everything else he's going to do, that Supreme Court justice in the end is going to seem like a small consolation prize. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be, now if you want to say, well, that's better than no prize at all, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not convinced of that because of what I said. The conservatives are going to start buying into things that aren't conservative. Whereas I can assure you, had Hillary Clinton become president, these conservatives would have maintained the integrity of their ideology. And even more so, they would have learned that you can't get behind a guy like Donald Trump to become president. That wasn't learned. In fact, they learned the exact opposite, is that people like Donald Trump can win an election, can win in the Republican Party, and conservatives are good to get behind somebody like that in the future. The exact opposite lesson was learned. And it's the wrong one. And between all of this stuff, I think 4 years from now, while people are complaining, and I'm just going to say to them, hey, at least you got your Supreme Court justice, right? That's what you wanted. You were so worried about Hillary Clinton. You got what you wanted. Oh, but all this other stuff came with it that made things even worse. Well, that's what you get when you focus just on one thing. So she and I, my mother and I had a, you know, and I will admit I had to apologize to her a little bit at the end, because I do get heated about this stuff, because you have to understand, my parents are intelligent people. They are not easily duped. They've lived their lives in a conservative way. They've been very good with their money. They've been good with their behavior, you know, everything. And I think that that's a reflection of me, the son that they raised, because I tend to be the same way. So when I hear my mother talk like this, I feel like she's getting a little bit, she's going off on the wrong path. Now, why does she think some of this stuff? Because what she's reading and watching, I think that she thinks it's objective, but it's not. It's not. And there are reasons for that. So it was an interesting discussion, but I think that what I'm taking out of it is I think that's where a lot of people are right now. I think that's not the right place to be. Let's move on to something else. Let's get into more of the specifics of what has been going on. There was Rex Tillerson, you know, the Secretary of State that you never hear from. He came out regarding this Tomahawk missile attack that happened on Friday. The point that he's trying to make with Russia, the statement that he made, is that Russia has to decide one of two things. Does it want to be on the side of... does it want to be on the side of Syria and Iran, or does it want to be on the side of the United States? And it would seem in general that that's a pretty decent statement, but I think that Vladimir Putin decided this, a long time ago. I mean, the Russians know how American politics works. They may not be American citizens, but they get the news. And they realize that administrations change once in a while. And you can have a president come in who is the complete opposite of the one before. Unlike, probably even more so than the rest of the world. And then that's exacerbated because the United States has an influence on so much that goes on in the world. So... I think that Russia has already made the decision. It took a look at the United States. It took a look at its own best interests and found people that it could play with. And I'm not convinced that that Russia wants to play with the United States. I'm not saying it doesn't fear the United States. I'm not saying it's not afraid of what we can do both economically and militarily. I'm not saying that. Vladimir Putin isn't stupid. But I also think that they believe that they can get away with what they're doing. And the truth is, at least a little bit, I think they can. I think they can to a certain extent. the problem started when Russia was allowed to get in, you know, and I'm not here to be Monday morning quarterback, because you can't go back. This isn't Star Trek. You can't go back into the past and change things. But the problem started when Russia got into the Middle East in the first place. That, remember, it was a big deal. Russia moving military equipment into Syria. And us allowing it to happen, us not doing anything about it, the Barack Obama administration not doing anything about it. And, you know, what's funny is that Democrats are so caught up that there's some alliance between Russia and Donald Trump and fixing the election and everything. But it was Barack Obama who was so friendly with Russia to the point that he didn't care that he allowed Russians to move into the Middle East. This was the time to fix that. And I don't know if... See, when you start shooting missiles, you start picking sides. And it was the Trump administration that is chosen to be on the side opposite of what Russia is. I'd also remind you, the United States, I mean, it's not like Assad just came into power within the last 8 years. He's been the leader of that country for a while. His father was the leader of that country before that, and the country has pretty much been the same the whole time. Anti-Israel, anti-Europe, anti-United States. But we put up with it. Because Syria is a little, you know, regional power, has no influence outside of its immediate area. I don't think the Israelis are even that afraid of Syria. So why again are we then getting involved there? It should be, as bad as Assad is, I remind you, the opposition isn't any better. It should be one of those situations, unfortunately, that if we're going to be in the Middle East and do this, really, the truth is, this is where I'm going with this. Although Russia may be wrong about Iran and being friends with Iran and helping Iran do what it's doing, when it comes to what is going on in Syria, Russia is on the correct side. As much as all of you find that disgusting, because what Assad and his people did in gassing all of these people, Russia is on the correct side. There are no winners here. You know, everybody tried to tell me that there was a binary option regarding this election. Well, you have to vote for Donald Trump because the other choice is Hillary Clinton. No, that's not. We got all sorts of choices. Well, here's what I know. When it comes to Syria, it is surely a binary choice. Either you're going to have Assad in power or you're going to have another group in power that's the same. It's the same. And probably a group that won't be as willing to go after ISIS. At least you can say this about Assad. He doesn't want ISIS going any further than it has. And that's probably part of the calculation that Russia made regarding all of this. Instead, we as the United States, we should be finding places where we can work together with Russia, stopping ISIS, controlling what's going on in the Middle East, and then opposing them and being hard on them when it comes to something like Iran. We haven't done that. Instead, we went in and bombed their friend, Assad. We bombed probably the wrong side. Well, we shouldn't have bombed anybody. So, could Russia have predicted a year ago that the United States would be shooting cruise missiles into Assad's area and going after him and what he did? I don't know. But I still think that with the United States we always have to make sure we're on the right side or we just stay out of it. And if we were going to get into it, what is the right side? Both sides stink. But I thought we would have learned something from Libya and from Egypt, and we haven't. And we're trying to do that all over again. So, you know, the Russians are supposed to pick between us and Assad and Iran. Well, those things, Assad and Iran, aren't necessarily aligned. So that comparison, that ultimatum that Rex Tillerson tried to give, it doesn't work. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we're back at America's Conservative Podcast. So that's Syria. We should have stayed out of it. If we were going to get involved militarily in the Middle East with this, I know this sounds bizarre, but we should have been on the same side that Russia is regarding Syria. Not Iran, but at least regarding Syria. But we didn't do that. Once again, now too late. Three or four days after those Tomahawk missiles, it's too late to close the barn door on all of this. And I just don't see Syria and Iran as being the same problem. I just don't. Now let's talk about North Korea, because if you don't know, there is an aircraft carrier group, the Carl Vinson aircraft carrier group, that is steaming. Is it steam? I guess it is steam. They're powered by nuclear reactors, but essentially it's steam. It's certainly not diesel engines. Going into at least the carrier itself, steaming into the area near South Korea, North Korea, into the Sea of Japan and the South China Sea, all in that area, steaming into the area. And even today, Donald Trump has issued another ultimatum. And this is regards to China that, you know, you are going to help us try to figure out this North Korean situation or we're going to do it on our own. And this is another problem. As you know, nobody that you could have listened to in the last 2 or 3 years has been more forceful about North Korea than I have been. Nobody. Because I've made the comment that all that happens with North Korea, the situation just continues to get worse. They get more dangerous day after day after day. And so it's easier to fix the problem now than it would be this time next year or the year after or the year after that. It would have been easier to fix this problem 20 years ago than it is now. But you will remember that my solution has always been that if you're going to do this, then you need to work together with Japan, South Korea, China, and Russia. We're talking about Russia again. To fix this problem, because they will all be the ones directly affected by any change that goes on in North Korea. They will be the ones that are affected, because it's not like North Korea is Mexico, where if we tick off North Korea, they can shoot a couple missiles into California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, I guess you could say Florida as well, where I live. It's not like that. But if we go in there and do something and North Korea wants to lash out, it's those countries that I just mentioned that are going to feel the fallout. If Kim Jong-un is going to go down in a blaze of glory, then he's going to start shooting. If he knows he's out of there, and he knows what's going to happen. The North Korean people may not know what goes on in the rest of the world, but Kim Jong-un and his people surely do. He knows what's going to happen. Then he knows he's probably going to go out in a blaze of glory if he feels threatened enough. And what it sounds like to me, though, here in this instance, is that we as the United States, we're hell-bent on doing something no matter what. no matter if Japan helps us or South Korea helps us, and certainly if China doesn't help us, this is certainly a different scenario than the way Donald Trump campaigned, where he said, we're going to put America first, make America great again, put America first. Is this the kind of foreign policy that puts America first, where we're essentially going in on it by ourselves to go after a country that is not a direct enemy, it is an enemy, but not threat to the United States militarily? It is a threat military to those other countries that I mentioned, but it's not the United States. I could have sworn, and this is the same way I feel about Syria, I thought that we were putting American national security interests first. Now, how that is with Syria, I don't know. How what we're doing in alone in near North Korea in the Sea of Japan is strange to me as well. Because those other countries are going to feel the fallout of this, and so they should be in on this, including China. Now, I see where Trump tried to entice the Chinese to help out. He had a meeting with the president of China last Friday, right around when those missiles were flying into Syria, saying that, you know, if you help us on this, we're going to work out, a better trade deal. And, of course, he's saying I'm a protectionist. You guys have been ripping us off all these years with trade and everything else. Well, you know I'm going to do something against you economically. Well, you'll get a better deal out of this if you work with us on North Korea. Do you think the Chinese believe that? Do you think that the Chinese can be convinced to do that? Do they believe what Donald Trump is saying? They can read the news just like I can read the news. And I'm sure they read that tax reform that Donald Trump said he was going to go, nah, it's not going to look like that. He said that he was going to get Mexico to pay for the wall. That's not going to happen. The Dreamers, they may all get to stay here and become citizens. He said that he was going to put America first, and we're only going to get involved. America's security is threatened. And what's he do? He shoots missiles into Syria. Now, why would China believe anything that this guy says? Why? Why? And in fact, I'm sure that the Chinese are looking at what's going on with the Carl Vinson. And I'm not sure they're as convinced that the United States is going to do something. Maybe they look at Syria and say, well, you know, he did just shoot missiles into Syria for virtually no reason. Maybe he would do something like that. And maybe we should take him seriously. What I don't think that Donald Trump is appreciating regarding all this and his administration, the military leaders, they get their say, but in the end, they just have to do what the commander-in-chief says. There is certainly would be more if let's say that that Donald Trump sent 60 cruise missiles into North Korea, going after nuclear facilities. Say they go after where Kim Jong-un lives. Let's just say. And China doesn't want to go along with it. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think that the North Koreans are really going to shoot an American aircraft carrier? Let's put it that way. Do you really think that? Now, in Syria's case, they don't have the military capability to go after anything in the United States military. They have jets and things, but, I mean, we'd blow them out of the sky. But they don't have the military that the North Koreans do. They don't have the hardware. Of course, Syria is a much smaller country than North Korea is, has way more people. Does have some sort of ballistic missiles that I'm not sure that Syria has. And so the fallout from a strike into North Korea would certainly be bigger than one into North Korea. Furthermore, the only real, I guess you could say, ally, and they are an ally, to the United States, that if Syria really wanted to strike back, that we would probably really get upset at is Israel. Probably. And I remind you, I don't think that Assad is even 1/100th as crazy as Kim Jong-un is. And the Syrian people, I believe, certainly know what's going on in the world much more than the North Korean people do. So it's not the same, but that's what worries me, that you can't draw a comparison between both. And the fallout from a North Korean strike is they're not going to go after the Carl Vinson. They're not going to go any American military. They're going to shoot missiles into South Korea. It's going to be South Korea and Japan who ultimately bear the brunt of what the United States is going to do. That's what's going to happen. Now, I see the South Korean leader. Do they have a new president now? The other one got put in jail, got charged with all sorts of crimes. And the leader of Japan is for this. We'll see that if they're for this, if the United States shoots 60 missiles into North Korea and then a missile ends up hitting Tokyo. Then we'll see. That's why I have said all this time that this needs to be a joint operation. There has to be an agreement between all of these countries that are, of course, South Korea and Japan are allies of ours. China, we're at least decently friendly with them. Russia, who knows? This is why I continued to say that this needs to be done together. And it's not going to be, it doesn't sound like. And to me, it sounds like Donald Trump is using the wrong enticements to get them to go along. I wonder if these, it very well may be that these countries, South Korea, Japan, China, wherever else, have convinced themselves, well, you know what, the United States does something into North Korea, then North Korea is going to react against the United States and their assets over there, not us. If they're thinking that, that's crazy. They can't be that stupid. They can't be that stupid. I think North Korea would figure out very easily that the quickest way to get the United States to stop shooting at them is to shoot a missile somewhere else. It's no different than in a hostage situation. If you want to get one hostage to do something, you don't threaten violence to that particular hostage. You threaten violence to some other hostage. That's what you do. That's the way these things work. You blackmail people into getting to do something or blackmail people into stopping doing something. So that's the way I think that North Korea would probably handle this if we went about this on our own. Granted, maybe Kim Jong-un will try to do what North Korea has done in the past. Okay. We'll stop our nuclear enrichment program and we'll stop to do this, but you got to send us bread. You got to send us water. You got to send us filet mignon. And then we'll behave. And then somewhere down the road, of course, they'll just blow that all off and go back to their nuclear enrichment. It may be that Kim Jong-un tries that with the Trump administration. I can't say that that's a bad idea. I don't know if Trump and his people will fall for it. But as long as it seems to me that this seems to be a solitary affair, then I think it's a mistake simply because of the fallout that can happen. Now, this goes back to the days when Democrats saying, see, Donald Trump or George W. Bush going to Iraq, shouldn't have done it, didn't have. There were all sorts of countries that were with the United States back in 1989 with Desert Storm, and then 2003 with what we did there in Iraq. There were all sorts of countries that were with the United States going about all of that. And all of them understood the risks. Saudi Arabia was for it. All of these countries over there were for it. They saw Saddam Hussein as a complete crazy man who could do anything at any time. This is not what's going on now. I don't know if there is any German warplanes or Italians or British or anything else over there looking to support an attack on North Korea. No. And I think this is a problem. And even going back, you know, to the strong days that all conservatives like to talk about, the Ronald Reagan days, it's not like he just pushed around those European countries when he went and put missiles in. Remember, that was the big deal. When the big deal and what drove all the peaceniks crazy was the Reagan bringing in missiles into Eastern Europe or on the edge of Eastern Europe. In deciding that we're going to defend, we're going to provoke, not provoke them, but confront the Soviet Union where they live in their backyard. And we're going to show them that they aren't going any further than the countries, these Eastern Bloc countries that they have. The United States and too many countries in NATO have been too easy on them. Well, the difference is that the governments of those countries wanted them there and assisted them. They couldn't have been happier, and I think they also knew, though, that Ronald Reagan and his administration, they were not going to shoot those missiles and do anything unless provoked. That is not what's going on here. No ally has had, there haven't been any missiles shot into South Korea recently. Are we going to get mad about the destroyer that was sunk 10 years ago in South Korea? If we wanted to do something, it would have been back then. We should have done it back then. North Korea shooting missiles into the Sea of Japan and everything. Provocative. Didn't hit anybody. Didn't kill anybody. So this seems like a strange time to do this alone. I'm always for wanting to work with these other countries to make North Korea go away. North Korea becoming like South Korea is best for the world. But it is not best for the world if the United States is going to go in there, start shooting people, start bombing things on its own, and others have to pay the brunt of it. That doesn't do anybody any good. And I will continue to say that. If, you know, you want to tick the Chinese off, bomb North Korea and then have all those North Koreans trying to flee into China. You think that's going to make us a friend of China? And we're going to continue to, I just think that these are using the wrong enticement for all this. I think that before you start sending any military assets into the area, you get together with these people and you come to an agreement about what you're going to do. I know that that's what stopped us from doing this. But I don't know what has exactly changed. And I worry because I think that this is an indication of Donald Trump, who he is he just likes flexing his muscles. And he is certainly more likely to do that than Ronald Reagan did back in the 1980s, where it was peace through strength. That's where that saying came from. Peace through strength. Everybody is going to know that we're strong. I don't know how you show you're strong while you're shooting cruise missiles into a civil war that you shouldn't be involved in. Where you're going in talking big about what you're going to do with North Korea when everybody else is going to have to feel the fallout. That's not strength. That's not strength. it's no different than in government, and you know, we're going to help the poor, and look how generous we are. Well, anybody with all these entitlement programs, anybody can be generous with somebody else's money. And this is what, you know, is kind of going on here. We're being generous, but we're putting everybody else's country on the line. And hoping, I guess hoping, that they're going to go along with us. Is this the way we go about making friends? And moreover, they know, all these countries know what goes on in American politics. Every country, let's put it this way. There are way more South Koreans who know what goes on in the United States more than Americans know what goes on in South Korea. It's not even close. And so these people know about Donald Trump. Of course, they knew him probably well before he was president. And he's not a guy who's great at keeping his word. There are several articles and books that he's written that show that he can back out of any agreement at any time. Now, you tell me why any of these countries want to get on board with this. If he now is trying to get them to do so, how could they not suspect that they themselves are the ones who are going to get screwed over in the end? But that's the president we have now. I didn't vote for him. I'd like to think that if this was a different kind of president, it was a conservative president, a man or a woman who kept their word, that if we wanted to do something about North Korea and we thought it was a threat to our allies, that we wouldn't be necessarily going about it this way. So, I don't know. One more thing before I go. Did you see this? I just found out about this. And as you know, within the last year, I've really gotten into guns, watching a lot. You know, I now am a gun owner, concealed carry permit holder. And YouTube is now yanking advertisements from gun videos. So there are many very popular gun channels on YouTube, TFB TV, the Firearm Blog TV, the Hickok 45. I mean, there are a variety of people who have very popular videos, get thousands and thousands, if not 100,000 views of their videos about different guns and shooting and everything. Well, YouTube has deemed all of that material inappropriate or offensive or tagged it or something. So the videos can still play, but no advertisements will be able to be shown. So meaning those people who have been making money off the ads that run during those videos, they're not going to be making that money anymore. And they aren't the only ones. There's a list of sexual content, nudity, violence, inappropriate language, drug usage. I mean, there's a whole list of things that allegedly they're going to have advertisements pulled from. And of course, the Second Amendment people are all ticked off about it. Free speech people are all ticked off about it. And they're saying, well, YouTube, they'll probably let all this other stuff be on there. I have to remind all of you, YouTube is a private entity. It can play any videos that it wants. It can take away advertisement from any group. It's not government. It's not stopping these people from making these videos. These people can, you know what? These people can still make their videos and have their own websites and play this stuff and sell advertisements that way. So I'm not as offended as other people are regarding this because I see this is the market of the work. It's either going to work or it's not for YouTube. But being that they're a private entity, it's their property. It's their web space that these people are using. They have to get to determine who gets to have advertising, who doesn't, way it goes. But I got to go. You can go to edwarddensel.com to find all of my recent shows of America's Conservative Podcast. You can email the show, edwarddensel@reagan.com. You can find me on Twitter, USA Podcast. Also find the show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern on the Prime Channel on redstatetalkradio.com. my Missing Person show, Unfound. I hope you'll check that out at Podomatic and iTunes. Had another big weekend of downloads for that show. I got to go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.